League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Let's begin.
This is the Boss.
I'm the Boss.
And the Gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gow and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine.
And a good Monday evening to everyone out there. I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight and Jose behind the glass. Welcome in, everyone.
My heart's still in Nashville.
Yes.
I'm not ready to be in Houston yet. I just got to be honest.
It was a great weekend. Jose, we missed you, but it was we had an extraordinary time in Nashville. It may give you some pause or concern.
Oh, boy.
Well, Carla found her way into a hookah bar.
And what?
Yeah, we got smoky
in
there.
I followed the boss in.
And
that's the truth.
It was a Chris Johnson event, and it got really racing there. We were looking for Ryan Griffin. We thought maybe he would show up, but he was in another place.
Apparently, he was dealing with windows, breaking through them.
All the better that we did not find Ryan Griffin, or I would have had to come bust you out of jail, Carla Dawson.
Exactly. Maybe. Or take glass out of my arms. I don't know what.
Now, we know this about Carla, Jose. She's the world's greatest sports fan. I mean, on a Saturday, she will, if necessary, watch an entire bowling tournament, a fishing tournament, a roller derby contest, whatever it takes. She needs her sports fix.
Sad but true.
I'm going to let you know, if you did not know already, Jose, if you did not expect so, Carla Dawson's one of the few people in America who watched every single pick of the NFL draft.
Why?
I know. I'm obsessed.
She can't help it.
Because you know what? I was telling David, I said, it's so in those late rounds when they've got the family or surrounding.
Right.
When that call happens, I want to be right there to see it all.
She's tearing up with
them. I had a lot of tears this weekend. Happy tears.
I mean,
happy
she
tears.
Is committed, Jose. I don't know why you weren't watching every single pick.
I can't.
Because Jose has a life.
Not every
He's young and fun.
He is young and fun. There is no doubt about that. And you're the Monday Night Delight. And we have a great show coming up. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Lance Zierlein.
I can't wait.
Yes, one of the foremost draft experts. We're going to ask Lance what team had the best draft over this draft season. Lance Zierlein, we return. And we'll get to ask him all about the Giants and the Raiders and all the teams that picked.
Don't forget about our Texans. I got a few questions about that, too.
All right, Lance Zierlein next. We return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
All right, this is a real treat. We get the mighty Lance Zierlein, NFL draft expert, joining us here on SB Nation Radio. Lance, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Well, we're doing great. We're back fresh off of Nashville. Carla did not want to come home. She wanted to just stay there.
Oh, my gosh. Lance.
Oh, you guys went?
We did. It was amazing. My heart's still there. I loved it.
It's something else, isn't it? It's quite a spectacle.
Have you gotten to sleep since then?
Not really. I got in late last night. Well, I got in last night at a decent time, watched the Rockets playoff game, and then had friends from out of town come in and say, hey, let's go to dinner tonight. Well, I had to watch Game of Thrones, obviously.
Of course.
So that ended at about 9:30, and I guess we went out to dinner after that. So it was a late, night for me, an early morning, and then I figure I'll sleep tonight.
Well, we're glad you're here with us today. Let's start out at the top. Tell us the two or three teams that impressed you the most at the NFL draft.
I think that the Tennessee Titans had a nice draft in what they did. I really like the player they drafted at number 19, Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State. I think he has a chance to be a top 3 to 5 player could come out of this year's draft. He has that kind of talent. And to get him at 19, I mean, obviously, he has an ACL tear, so the timetable for return will dictate whether or not he even ends up playing this year. But even if he doesn't, that's an injury that you should come back from you know, at his position. So I think they should be in good shape there. He's just such an unbelievable value at number 19. Even if he doesn't play this year, you're drafting for what they'll be in year three. You're not drafting for what they do in year one. And too many people make that mistake of thinking the draft is, you know, judged on what a player does in his first year. And the reality is it's who they become is ultimately how you're judged and how your drafts yield fruit. So I really liked what they did. I thought the Raiders did a nice job. I really wasn't a fan of Cleveland Farrell that high at number four. And I don't think that anyone would have taken him in the top 10 to 12 picks, to be honest with you. But the Raiders came back. And look, I understand why they did it. And I think he's one of those guys that you want to change culture with in the locker room because mm-hmm. he's got such high football character. And there's just so much to like about. He's a solid player with just unbelievable character. And then you follow up with, you know, a couple of good picks, Josh Jacobs from Alabama, so you get your running back help right away. He should step in and help. And then Jonathan Abram, the safety from Mississippi State, who is an NFL-ready safety, one of the, I think, one of the best, if not the best, safety prospect in this year's draft. So when it's all said and done, and it wasn't just the first, you know, three picks that they had, I thought they had a nice draft all the way around. So I think the Raiders really did a nice job as well of making the most out of their picks.
And they continued with the Clemson reel in with Trayvon Mullen, the D-back, and then when they took Hunter Renfrow. That was so exciting.
Right. They got another slot receiver there. And he's a guy that I think will make the league. So he just has a way. He doesn't drop many passes. He has a way of getting open. Once again, that's just their way of, I mean, Mike Mayock and John Gruden obviously coveted guys from winning programs, guys who understood what it was like to win. That was, you know, you got an Alabama player, Mississippi State. You've got like three players from Clemson. I mean, that's clearly an effort to go find guys from winning programs who understands what, you know, who understand what winning looks like. That's what that is.
Who understand what winning looked like and can do it with great character to bring into that locker room. And I appreciate Mike Mayock starting out. They're going to get a new home in Las Vegas and just drafting for character. Like when he was questioned about the Farrell pick and he said he fit what we want the Raiders to look like perfectly as far as his character. And what can you say about that? I mean, he's obviously, you know, from in my mind, the best defensive front in Division I football last year. That it was crazy with Wilkins and Farrell and Dexter Lawrence and Austin Barnes. I mean, that was an amazing front. And then when you just have to appreciate that the Raiders, that's what they're doing. They said they were going to surprise at four, and they definitely did.
Well, they certainly did. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
All right, let's take you closer to home, the Houston Texans. I was sitting with Carla when they made their selection of Titus Howard, and, of course, he wasn't the first name everyone envisioned, but I think over the last couple of days he's grown on us. What was your take on the Titus Howard pick?
Well, there had been rumors that he could go in the first round, so I think, you know, the Texans probably heard some of the same things. They heard about where he was going to fit and where he was going to go. And when you looked at this draft, there was just a very limited amount of left tackles available. And I think the Texans probably reached a little bit because they wanted that left tackle. And Andre Diller was on the board, and he went right off the board right before them. So I think my guess is they would have taken Andre Diller if he were available. When he wasn't, they stuck with a guy that they obviously had graded highly enough for them to put him there in that position at number 23. Now, once again, like I said, there's really three, I think, impact left tackles in this draft. And it was Andre Diller, Titus Howard, and Greg Little. So it didn't surprise me. I mean, I had the Texans taking Greg Little in my last mock draft for that very reason, drafting a left tackle because it's such a huge need. And I'm not a fan of drafting, you know, reaching based on need, and I do think they did that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But he does have talent, and there's, you know, watching him play and watching his situation and how he's kind of risen up the boards late, it really is reminiscent of what happened in 2008 with Dwayne Brown, where Dwayne Brown got hot and came off the board in the first round where people didn't expect him to come off. And as we all know, here in Houston, he was a Pro Bowler and an All-Pro. So that ended up being a fantastic draft in that year. So we'll see. I think Titus Howard's got a good chance to start this year. Could be a bumpy road for him early on because it's a big step up in competition from Alabama State, and he's got some things to learn, but he definitely has some talent.
Well, Lance, I love hearing that. That makes me feel a lot better about it because I started thinking when that pick happened, thought, wait a minute, Juwan Taylor sitting here, Cody Ford sitting here.
Right.
And I'm thinking, is this, you know, Philly's GM, Howie Rosen, who I was really angry at, is that him being savvy and experienced? And then I felt like they maybe caught the Texans a bit off guard, like they were so set on Dillard, and it looked like they were going to get him, and then, bam, Rosen makes that, you know, trade, and off he goes. But it sounds like, from talking to you, it was not a, you know, reflex type of move.
No, I think the Texans knew there was a chance that, I mean, everyone knew they've got a big need at left tackle. So I think it's likely in their contingencies that when he started falling, that they knew there could be somebody who would target just ahead of them because everyone kind of knew they needed a left tackle. So I think they understood it. They just couldn't do anything about it. They weren't going to trade away picks. They feel like their roster really needs some remaking in the secondary at cornerback, and they needed more than one offensive lineman. They clearly felt like they needed a tight end. So that is that's not super unusual to see them have to sit tight because they feel like every single pick was going to be a valuable pick for them, and they didn't want to give any away. So they just kind of had to sit and grin and bear it. So I think they expected that could potentially happen. So I don't know that that was they had to have had a contingency in place. And I think if you ask them, they would tell you they didn't have those two players, Dillard and Howard, graded all that differently. So that's my guess on that one, on how that kind of went down. And, you know, as far as what the when you look at what the Texans really need, they have three cornerbacks this year who are on one-year deals. And so they needed to get more than one cornerback, or they were going to find themselves in the same position next year. So you got one in the sixth who has a chance to develop into cornerback depth, which is what you're going to need. And then they've got another in the second who I think has a chance to potentially get some reps this year and maybe get starting reps by the middle of the season.
But that's great news. I like talking to you, Lance. That's good to know. Okay, of course, you know, I know it's been talked about and talked about, but I cannot stop scratching my head with good old Dave Gettleman giving us such a nugget at number six with Daniel Jones. And, you know, I look at one number in particular where in Jones' three-year career, and my gosh, it's not this guy's fault. He's getting so much garbage for it, the poor kid. But 52 touchdowns in his three-year career at Duke. And then you've got Dwayne Haskins, who had 50 touchdowns in his senior year at Ohio State. What gives?
Well, I mean, one guy had a lot more talent around him, that's for sure. Paris Campbell was the second-round pick. Terry McLaurin, I believe, was the second- or third-round pick at the wide receiver position. You had Mike Weber, running back, who was drafted. J.K. Dobbins will be drafted, another running back there. So, I mean, they have plenty of talent at Ohio State. And you look at Daniel Jones, I don't think there's anyone else getting drafted from Duke. So, that's frankly one of the things. The other thing to keep in mind is that I just think he reminds him of Eli Manning.
That's what David said, right.
Well, he looks like him physically.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that simple. He's got the same demeanor. They come from David Cutcliffe's school of quarterbacking. He went to the Manning Passing Academy. It's just everything about it just looks like another Eli Manning, and I think that's one of the things they really fell in love with.
Well, what I thought was so fascinating, I agree with you, is that Dave Gettleman, I heard him today in an interview saying, roll the tape. This is why I took the kid. And, you know, I haven't watched a lot of Duke games this past season, but I did watch the Clemson game because I thought this is going to be the stiffest competition that Duke's going to see. And he was a disaster. So I'm like, wow. I mean, that's the closest to an NFL defense that he's going to face. And he was missing targets and overthrowing. And, I mean, he's a work in progress, that's for sure.
Well, I wasn't a big fan. I mean, I thought he was a second-round guy, but I also knew that there was a decent possibility that he could end up at six because the beating testament at six, there was a concern that he wouldn't make it to 17 because the rumors went out there that Washington might trade up to get him. You know, that kind of got leaked out there. And so I think the Giants just said, look, if we like him at 17, why wouldn't we like him at 6? So I think that's ultimately what ended up happening there. They didn't get cute. They got the quarterback they wanted. And we'll see. You know, we'll see if it pans out. I mean, there's some things to like about him. It's not like I didn't like the quarterback. I think he can become an average starter. But I just think you're going to have to fit a lot of pieces around him for him to have the success that maybe you want. And that, you know, when you do that, those aren't typically sixth pick of the draft type picks. Those are guys that you can find maybe later in the first, maybe in the second round. But as it stands, you know, the Giants went out there and made him an early, early pick, so we'll have to see if he plays like that.
You know, it's going to be tough for him as he's going to be compared to, you know, his peers. He's going to be compared to Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins and, honestly, Sam Darnold and, you know, Josh Rosen and these people. But I know one person who is super, super happy about that pick. That would be OBJ. He's laughing all the way to Cleveland for that one, I'm pretty sure.
All right, on that note, Lance, we're going to let you go. Get some sleep, rest up. Great work all this draft season. Really appreciate you joining us.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Thanks, Lance.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, great to talk to Lance Zierlein. And one of the observations he made that I do find amusing, because I really have been thinking it, is that Daniel Jones looks like he's a member of the Manning family.
You said that when we were in Nashville.
He looks
you
just
talked
like
about
it.
That.
He's got that same sort of smile, physical build, skin color. He's a Manning. So therefore, it's just a perfect fit. Gettleman had no choice. It was destiny. He had to take him.
Would you do it?
I would not have taken Daniel Jones. No, in fact, I'm sympathetic to something I've heard you say, which is Dwayne Haskins was the better quarterback to pick. I mean, look, the Giants needed a quarterback, to be sure. So taking Dwayne Haskins at 6, I would have felt more comfortable doing that. I mean, there were whispers that they might have been able to wait and taken Daniel Jones at 17. But obviously, well, Gettleman, quote, knew that there were two other teams that would have done that between 6 and 17.
As for a fact, quote.
For a fact.
Which no one knows for a fact anything in the draft.
Well, they call the draft the lying season for a reason. Nobody's going to reveal. In fact, if I were back at 11 or 12 and I were talking to Dave Gettleman before the draft, I'd say, yeah, I'm going to take Daniel Jones at 11 because that means Jones will go at 6. Gettleman will take him, and that'll make some other player drop to me. Everybody has an incentive to lie in this case.
Right. No one would show their hands. Even if they were telling the truth, you wouldn't do it. So
right.
he has an interesting explanation.
His bedside demeanor with the press is a little awkward. It's just a little bit off, I think. Another guy who I think had a wild week and has landed in a much better place now is Josh Rosen. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he had to hear for weeks and weeks, if not months, about how Kyler Murray was the better quarterback, how the Cardinals were infatuated with Kyler Murray, how, in fact, they were going to draft Kyler Murray and then Rosen would be cast out. And all that came to pass. However, now that we're on the other side of this, now that he's through all that, two things have happened to him. One, he's gone to Miami as opposed to Arizona. And I actually feel better about Miami's fate now. I mean, they've got a new coach. They've got a new opportunity. And frankly, their coach has a whole lot more experience than the great Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. So I'm going to say, well, maybe Flores is going to be a better head coach in Miami. And then second, the other fun thing for Josh Rosen is he's long had a reputation as being sort of a prickly personality, not getting along. And now everyone is coming to his defense. He showed up at the Larry Fitzgerald softball tournament. He got all this credit. He did the video where he went out and said goodbye to Arizona. It feels like his...
Offered his townhouse to Kyler Murray.
Yes, his personal standing, his perception has risen through all this adversity. True?
I think it has because he's handled it with class.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very outspoken, pretty provocative player.
Right.
And he has really been quiet about this. He's gone about his business and really, frankly, thanking Arizona and, you know, getting excited to go to Miami. He's handled this really well. And complimentary words about Kyler Murray. I mean, it's impressive. I hope this is his, you know, his turnaround campaign would be really great. And I think he's walking into a great coaching situation with Brian Flores, even though it's a first-year coach. He's from the Patriots tree. I'd rather do that than aerating it with Cliff Kingsbury. I just don't have a lot of faith in that. And honestly, the combination of Cliff Kingsbury and general manager Steve Keim, I mean, you think about it. Now, Cliff Kingsbury didn't have anything to do with last year's draft, but they've taken a quarterback with their first round pick for 2 years in a row.
I know. I just have this instinct. And, well, it's that the Kingsbury-Murray combo is either going to do really well or
it's gonna blow
really
it.
Miserably.
Right.
It's just going to fall flat on its face. We'll all be looking back at this and just smirking at yet another round of failure for the Cardinals. And actually, when I think about those two alternatives, I think the latter is more likely. I think it's much more likely that it's going to end in failure.
Oh, I do. And you look at Miami. They got a first rounder for a late fifth rounder.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that's awful. That's what the trade was.
Well,
yikes.
Yeah, so, of course, yeah, it was a second round pick that they gave up for Rosen. And it was not even their own. They went out and got another one.
Right.
It was little draft capital. Little financial capital. Yes, there's a later fifth round pick, but little draft capital, little financial capital, and they get a guy who may become a big time franchise quarterback. Obviously, that jury is still out. Rough first year in Arizona, but a lot of quarterbacks struggle as rookies in the NFL.
And he didn't have pieces around him. And yes, it is the fifth rounder is for next year, actually.
Right.
But when you think about that,
yep.
Wow. So it was a late second round, but yeah, the fifth rounder next year, that's for a first-round guy who Arizona traded up last year to take Josh Rosen at number 10.
Well, you mentioned the New England Patriots, where Brian Flores had come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually look at their draft, and I think it was exceptional. They were quietly effective yet again.
I was just going to say, and who's surprised?
Yeah. I mean, N'Keal Harry, I think, as their first-round pick last
year. Out of Arizona State, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a really nice addition. They obviously, that was the intersection of a lot of talent and a great deal of need. Patriots need help with the wide receiver spot. He certainly helps that core quite a bit. Now, they did not go and get a tight end. And so that's left some people with their heads scratching. There's really not much talent available now. And so it'll be, I mean, Rudolph, there were whispers that we're going to go make a trade with the Vikings for Rudolph. And that's still, I guess, a possibility. But I was surprised the Patriots didn't go more aggressively after one of the tight ends. I mean, there were some good ones in this draft, and they didn't come out with one.
Well, the first two from Iowa went in the first round. You know, they went pretty early,
yeah,
and Noah Fant
two.
And T.J. Yep. Hockenson. But you know what they did? I feel they got a great steal. So with the 87th pick, I mean, this is round three. They got Damian Harris, a running back out of Alabama, who was Alabama's number one option. Such an interesting situation. The most consistent ball carrier. And Josh Jacobs played behind him and was ranked in most drafts ahead of Damian Harris and went to the Raiders in the first round with the 24th pick.
Yeah.
But Damian Harris was available to them at pick number 87.
Well, it is that trade between productivity and projection. Productivity-wise, Damian Harris was off the charts, did very well at Alabama, and arguably was better than Josh Jacobs. Evidently, in the projection, people are higher on Josh Jacobs. He will land with your Raiders. And boy, the Raiders needed Josh Jacobs.
Oh, I mean, they did.
That was a great pick, right?
First and only running back to go in the first round.
First and only running back, and a big hole. Marshawn Lynch, of course, announcing his retirement. So the Raiders needed to fill that gap. The other guy I liked for New England was
Chase Winovich.
I'm going with Chase Winovich. And it's something about that hair. I mean, he's got some attitude to him. He's got some sass, right? It's sort of the way when I look at you here in the studio, there's a little hair flowing when the wind blows.
Chase and I have
right.
similar hair, yes.
Yeah, Chase and you. It's just wide-eyed,
not a lot.
Crazed, coming in, talk about sports. There's something there. So that's I was sympathetic to that pick for the Patriots.
Not bad. What did you think about your Cowboys? It was quiet for them.
Yeah, it felt like a really quiet draft. Of course, their number one or their first round draft pick was essentially Amari Cooper. So they didn't have anything to do in the first round. They had to wait all the way till pick number 58, where they took Tristan Hill out of University of Central Florida. And I guess he really has all the physical tools to be a big time player. There have been questions about his attitude. He was really a one-year starter, but not even a full-time starter. So I think he's still a question mark. I'll tell you what, though, if he does perform up to his physical abilities, he plays that three-technique defensive tackle role just as Rod Marinelli would want. He could be the perfect guy they've been looking for in that role.
They call him a bull in a china shop. Raw but explosive.
Raw but explosive.
We'll I don't want him in my china shop, but good for the boys.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a close look at the Rockets-Warriors series and how the refs are influencing the outcomes when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I'm going to really try to be a nice guy, you know, because I really don't want to give the charity to them. I'd rather have my charity and have the money. So, the response was they just came at halftime and said they missed it. That's what they told me, so... They missed four of them. That's 12 foul shots. So be it. I mean, they're trying to do the best they can do. And, obviously it was what it was.
That's Mike D'Antoni talking about his Rockets. And obviously the Rockets left that game shaking their heads, frustrated with the officials.
Minus Chris Paul on the floor.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good posture for this team. Although it is, there's always that case that if you cry loudly enough that maybe next game the calls will go that way, that somehow you'll get inside the heads of the refs and the breaks will go in the direction of the Rockets next game. Did you come away feeling good about the Rockets' play and the way that they were working to get fouls off their three-point shots?
No. I came away really disappointed with the Rockets for two reasons. Number one, the Warriors were not on their best game. Yes, KD was. He's having out-of-body experiences game after game. It's just insane what he is doing. But other than that, you know, Steph and Klay are a little beat up with their ankles. They didn't have great nights. They both got, especially Steph got in early foul trouble. This, to me, what Golden State did not have their best game last night. This was the Rockets' chance to take one at Oracle, and they didn't. And let me tell you, it's not the officiating. And I want to say it was. I mean, you know, we're based here in Houston. I love me some Rockets. They missed 33 three-pointers last night. Did you hear that? 33. And they lost by 4. Do not look for the blame game to put it on the refs. Okay, there were missed calls. No doubt. There were 45 fouls in game one. It was crazy. It was hard to get into a flow of the game. There were some missed calls, especially in the first half, missed that should have been called against Steph and against Klay. At the end, which are the ones that they're really fussing about, there are no calls. And the league, you know, in the two-minute report has confirmed that. I don't like the look of what Houston's doing. They missed an opportunity to steal one at Oracle, and they really could have. Blaming it on the refs, it's just not taking accountability for the fact that you missed 33 three-pointers. And let me say...
Which is an unfortunate reminder of Game 7 last year when they couldn't hit the three either.
Well, let's look at Game 7 last year. We shouldn't need to look at Game 7, right? We're in a new season, brand new postseason. And honestly, you know, top to bottom on that roster for the Rockets, they have no problem being able to beat Golden State. If you look at the matchups... They are probably the best team in the league, in my opinion, especially in the Western Conference, to take care of Golden State. They really can do it.
Well, I might caveat that. I agree they're probably the best team to potentially win, but I would still say Golden State is certainly heavily the favorite.
They're heavily the favorite. And the reigning champ should always be the favorite.
Okay.
I mean, unless something really drastically goes wrong. But today, the Rockets released this audit that they had done in-house of Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals last year against Golden State, which Golden State won, as everyone knows, on Houston's floor. And they are telling the league, look at all these calls that you missed. You cost us 18.6 points, which would have won the game for them. The league is responding and saying, I don't really like the metrics. I don't understand exactly what you... Because they have their own little system. Daryl Morey is a quant. He's excellent at what he does, which is how he can build this team like this. But I would beg to differ with the Rockets. And I'm like, why are you digging up what happened a year ago and saying that the refs stole your ticket to the Western Conference Finals? Concentrate
odd
more.
Timing.
It's odd timing. And what I want to say is it wasn't the refs, Houston. It was the record that you set in that game for 27 consecutive misses from three. Why isn't that brought up? And I would also point out that Klay Thompson in the first 2 minutes of that game had three fouls.
Right.
I bet if Golden State did their own self audit, they could pick up something that wasn't right in the first half. I don't like what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing out of Houston. Play ball.
It's striking to me because when I was thinking about that game last night, Rockets were missing three-point shots. Fouls were not being called. The Rockets were working to get the foul, right? So if you want to be a consistent three-point shooter, typically you want to shoot consistently, have perfect form, keep your legs underneath you, extend yourself up, and do the goose egg release and make a basket.
Underneath you or underneath your opponent?
But that's the point. And so if you're working to get your body underneath the opponent to induce a foul, that may undermine your ability to make the shot. There is a trade there. I mean, obviously there are windows and times when Harden will both make the three-point shot and get the foul, and that's fantastic. But if you're working or you're thinking foul first as you're making your shot, I don't think that supports you actually making the shot. I think it really puts you in a bad position. I think it gets your legs in the wrong place and your form gets out of kilter.
No, you're so right about that. And in support of what you're saying, further ammunition with that, is that Harden drew fouls this season on 100 contested threes.
Yeah.
This season alone,
yeah.
He leads the NBA in that. And what I would say is that, you know, the rule is that your offensive player has to allow the defensive player a place to land.
Yep.
And with all this whining and complaining from Harden and the Rockets today, it could backfire to them in two ways. A, you're poking the bear in the reigning champs of Golden State because you're saying they didn't beat them. You're saying the refs beat them.
Right.
And then James Harden is now, he's kind of showing his own hand. If you really go back and slowly look through everything, you can see that he could end up being a victim of his own complaining because he does not allow the last call, especially in the final waning seconds that he felt Draymond Green, you know, fouled him. He didn't. Draymond Green did basically a vertical jump and Harden's feet came well in front of him. So he has to be careful. He definitely, it's built into the Rockets system, clearly their offense, that they're manipulating their shots to draw the foul. And it works a lot for them. It really does. But I love what you're saying. Concentrate on your technique. Concentrate on the shot. The fouls are going to come naturally and your shots are going to fall. I'll be darned. And, you know, I've got to believe that, hey, this is human. Humans are refs. The same, the Saints, and, you know, could talk about that with their football, you know, the playoffs this year and the NFC Championship game. Those were humans that missed a terrible, you know, defensive pass interference. But.
And by the way, for the record, I think the refs did miss some calls, particularly in the first half.
They did. And I said that early on.
Yes. When Harden was shooting, I think he deserved some calls that he didn't get.
No, that's right. But basically, this, I really believe this, that things balance out during the course of a game. Usually these guys are professional. They're on in a very highly contested series. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't even know if I want to watch game two. It's really going to be so tightly called that it's going to be that situation where if you breathe on someone, boop, foul, you know, technicals, fouls, all kinds of stuff. I think it's going to be a bit messy.
NBA is messy that way. It's always hard. The other one, whether it's a charge or a block, I mean,
right.
You know,
oh my goodness.
It's always been
where
a really.
Where their feet set.
Right.
Where
it's
know.
A very hard. I mean, calling NBA games is a rugged, rugged endeavor.
No, it really is.
Interesting in that series, beyond the officiating, it's funny, this morning, at least maybe this last week or so, the narrative in the NBA has been how great Kevin Durant is. I keep hearing that over and over, and
oh,
he is great. He really has the full breadth of offensive firepower, and he's playing better defense. But it wasn't. But a month ago, we were talking about, is the Greek Freak or James Harden the MVP? But really, Kevin Durant in this playoff has stepped up in a way that we haven't seen him in a little while.
Now he is so complete.
Yep.
It's ridiculous because he is a seven-footer with a 7'6 wingspan,
yep.
Who can shoot a three, not only a three, but a Steph Curry length 3.
Right.
You know, 7 feet behind the arc. I mean, he can do so much. He can attack the basket. And the only difference between he and LeBron and kind of their abilities is he doesn't have that 280-pound power body that can mow people over. But he can dunk like the Greek freak. He can do it all. And it's just, it's beautiful to watch. And it's funny, you realize his greatness without actually being conscious of it. When in the beginning of the Clippers series, the first couple games, he had 23 points, 25 points, whatever it was. And you kind of thought, oh, well, that's no big deal. That's a lot of points.
Yep.
And it's not until we...
It happens quietly.
And you even look at his 38-point night against the Clippers. 30 of it was in the first half.
Yep.
Did you hear that? 30 points in the first half.
Yep.
He is that great. And then he followed it up with a 50-point night. And I think this is just fun to watch. He is truly, to me, the best player on the planet. You've got Steph as the best pure shooter in the league. Steph and Clay as the most potent backcourt. And Kevin Durant as the most complete all-around player.
Well, that's what makes that team, to me, so exceptional. And if I do believe it's still sort of a David versus Goliath. Rockets are in that
you
posture.
Really think
yeah,
so.
They're the wow. David here. And they are, now they can add
You're
to that whole
David.
Underdog narrative that they're not getting help from the refs. So they're really up against a big, tall challenge with Kevin Durant. Now, you mentioned the Greek freak. Obviously, Milwaukee lost game one to the Celtics last night. And Celtics played very, very well. They now
beautiful
have
game. Game plan by Brad Stevens.
5 wins in a row. Yeah, they had a week to prepare. I mean, one benefit of beating Indianapolis or Indiana in short order was the Celtics got almost a week. And it looks like Brad Stevens figured out the best formula for slowing down the Greek freak. He clogged up that middle and used Al Horford very, very effectively, but threw other bodies at him as well. Great defensive scheming by Brad Stevens and great execution by the Celtics team.
Do you see a difference when they get Malcolm Brogdon back, the Bucks, which should be happen in game 3.
So it will make a difference if they're not already down 0-2. I mean, the next game I think is really critical. Obviously, it's in Milwaukee. If the Celtics come out with a 2-0 lead heading back to Boston, then I think it'll be too late. That won't make any difference for his return. I would say that I think that, look, the normal rhythm of these series is, of course, is that Milwaukee will get the split at home. They'll get game 2. There's always that ebb and flow and a really good matchup. I mean, these are two teams. And I told you a couple weeks ago, I thought Milwaukee would beat the Celtics in 7 games in large part because, well, Milwaukee had the home field advantage. And the Celtics haven't been a great road team in the playoffs. They have this year. But last year, they really struggled on the road. I mean, they got all the way into the conference finals, and they did it with only 1 win at home. But this year they're winning on the road, or they won it on the road last night. And if they win Tuesday, heading back to the Boston Garden, I think...
You think it's a sweep?
Then I think it's... Well, no, I'm never going to say sweep because I have too much respect for Milwaukee. But
agreed.
Then I think it's a 4-1 or 4-2 series. I'm not ready to pull a Paul Pierce and say, it's over! It's done! The Celtics, after 1 win, have won the whole series. No, I've got way too much respect for the Bucks are a good team. And
they're a great team.
And the Greek Freak and that team will make adjustments. Brooks Lopez, the rest of the supporting cast, they did not shoot well last night. They had some open threes that just didn't go down. So sometimes just the cycle of making your threes will change the dynamic of a game, at least. And I think that's the best outcome, the most likely outcome probably in the Tuesday game 2 is that the Bucks just shoot the ball better at home and they're able to get a win and they split at home and then they go off to Boston.
I think Giannis, after seeing what the defense presented him last night, he realizes he's got to get that ball out quicker because he's not really a perimeter shooter. That's not his strength. And
yep.
That's where they were forcing him and he's just got to distribute better. But, you know, give it to Al Horford. That guy showed up and showed out again.
Yeah.
Remember last season he was a star in the postseason. But I'll tell you, if you look at a 7-game series and you're putting Al Horford against Giannis Antetokounmpo, I mean, who's going to win that out? You would think the possible MVP of the league is going to dominate Al Horford, but I don't know. Al
well,
Horford
no doubt.
Is sure
if we were
a star.
Drafting from those two teams, Greek Freak's the best player on that court. But I might say the top 7 or 8 players – certainly the Celtics, when you look at the top 7 or 8, Celtics have more total talent on the court. There's more of a drop-off from the Greek Freak down to the rest of his supporting cast. Celtics are pretty darn deep now. When you think, we haven't even mentioned Gordon Hayward or Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. These guys are
all really
good
players. And Marcus Smart's going to be coming back as well.
And you think about, I mean, Kyrie, playoff Kyrie has been good. The only question to me is when the Celtics face adversity again, if they get down 2-1 in the series, will they start their finger pointing again? Will they start to look it around in the locker room, and will it become divisive? Will Kyrie say, well, all my teammates don't know how to play in the playoffs and point fingers as he did in the regular season? It's so easy for a team to unite and for a team to play well
when you're doing well.
When they're winning.
Absolutely.
But we shall see if they face adversity how that works out. All right, when we come back, we'll take a deeper dive look into the NBA. We'll also see what might happen this June offseason when we return here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I'll be just talking one more moment here about Kevin Durant and how exceptional he is. His body type, the breadth of offense that he brings to bear. And yet he'll likely leave the Warriors this offseason. And when that happens, though, I think the Warriors may still be the class of the West. I mean, who would be, let's say they win again this year and Durant leaves. They may still be, even without Kevin Durant, the best team in the West.
Well, remember, they won without him in 2015.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm going to be on the record of saying this is how fair I am. I just want you to know this.
Yes.
So I love me some KD.
Sure.
He is, I would say, 99% leaving, and he'll probably end up in New York. And you know what? I don't fault him for it. He took a one-year deal. He didn't want to do long-term. The year after they won the championship, he took a pay cut so that they could sign Livingston and Iguodala. He's a team player. He gets to do what he wants.
Sure, he'll move on.
I'll miss him in Golden State, but I wish him the best. He didn't do anything that he shouldn't do.
Very good. He earned it. We'll be back in just a minute after the break. We'll return here on SB Nation Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.